Social platforms play a hugely critical role within press freedom. It allows news organisations to build an audience, to build a trusted brand, to build that trust in media that we're continuing to look at. But it also allows journalists to be able to have a voice on the platform, not just news media journalists working for big organisations, but also independent voices, people who are working in precarious areas or places where conflict is rife.
At the same time, social media does facilitate the spread of misinformation and disinformation. How does that threaten press freedom?
The rise of disinformation and misinformation is critical when it comes to talking about press freedom. The problem that we face is that as long as this misinformation and disinformation is allowed to expand and rise on the platform, it's going to threaten the press as we see it. Right now on Twitter in particular, threats against journalists online are being not taken as seriously as maybe they would have been even 2 years ago. What we're seeing now is that these social platforms are not taking action. They're rolling back measures that were in place. For instance, COVID pandemic, Twitter in particular put in really strong policies about the sharing of information, how that information could be labeled essentially, and also how fact checkers could engage with that content online to make sure that the content wasn't being spread. But what we're seeing now in the last number of months is that your feed is full of misinformation and mistruths about the pandemic, and that's going largely unchecked in the effort of promoting free speech. And I'm not sure how you can say that your press freedom is in place and have free speech which is engaged in promoting misinformation and disinformation.
How does EBU go about protecting their eyewitness news sources?
So the European Broadcasting Union is an alliance of public service broadcasters in Europe, plus partners around the world. And they work together to exchange material on news events. And my section of that is the Eurovision Social Newswire, where we discover, verify and clear eyewitness media emerging on social platforms for use by broadcasters. It's vitally important that, of course, from a journalistic perspective, that we are protecting our sources and taking every possible precaution to protect the people who are providing us not only with content, but also information. When we speak to a source, our first thing is to make sure that they're okay to have this conversation with us, that we're not putting them in jeopardy by speaking to them over a public network or by speaking to them in a way that could draw unnecessary attention to them. So for us, it's really about making a risk assessment about how they are, where they are, and what our intervention with them could possibly due to their personal safety. We tend not to broadcast material that might put people in jeopardy, that might identify people or locations or times or places. But when we do make contact, the first question we always ask is, are you okay? And that's the most important thing that we do, because it's a cold call. We're not talking to people that we've known for years. We're talking to people who are in a precarious situation. They've just witnessed a really big event that is in the news agenda.
Is it often that you encounter journalists on the ground who are struggling to get their message out because of restrictions on the freedom of expression?
Absolutely. A lot of the people that we deal with are independent journalists or videographers or bloggers who may be in a place where press freedom is limited or even non-existent. If we take the recent protests in Iran over the death of Mahsa Amini, we were talking to hundreds of people in closed networks such as Telegram and Signal, trying to understand their perspective. But it was very, very difficult for them to have their voice heard because it was being monitored on social media. They were in fear of repercussions for not only them, but for their loved ones. And for us, it was very, very important that we respected their ability to be able to contact us when they felt it was possible for them to talk to us. The important thing for us is that when journalists are in a really precarious position, we do want to be able to tell their stories. We do want to try and be the voice of the voiceless.
EBU's members are public service broadcasters, and there's been concerns recently about the way some of these public service media organizations have been labeled by Twitter as government funded. Do you think this is a concern that they share, and do you think this could compromise press freedom in the long run?
We've seen a number of news organizations, the BBC, Swedish Radio, NPR, and CBC in the US and Canada, have all said that they're tackling or trying to fight these labels that are being appearing on their accounts. I think you can look at it at two ways in particular. On the face of it, you can see that there's an effort from Twitter to promote transparency, to show that, yes, there's things you need to know about this organization. And that's great if you're going to do that for everybody. I think that if you're picking and choosing the news organizations that you are labeling, it can invoke a huge amount of questions about media and trust in media in particular. If you label someone as a government entity or a government-funded entity, you have to explain why you're doing that. And I think that that's the missing link here.
with the rise of the use of AI in really every area of our lives. And even in news, it seems like the era of AI-generated news anchors and news channels is really here. How do you see the future of press freedom in a world that's driven by AI?
It's a very exciting time for the news business because there's so much potential with AI for good. The thing about it is that what AI will do for us on a positive side is it will make us more comprehensive with information. We'll be able to source a lot more content in a very quick way. We're able to decipher that a lot more. Using simple workflows with AI in the newsroom now is making a massive difference in terms of the scale of content that we can acquire, but also how we can also use that in the greater good of telling stories. But there is a massive danger to all of this as well, because going unchecked, what we're going to see is a huge amount of content out there that is not correct. The dangers are is that certain audiences think that it's okay to get their news from an automated source. For instance, if you look at India, they've started using AI anchors. And while it sounds like a fantastic novelty, right now it has a human intervention for what they're saying. But in 2 or 3 years' time, that AI robot or entity might be autonomous and might be coming up with its own news. Right now, that AI has an editor who's writing a script. It has a journalist who's checking it. It has a sub-editor who's checking the content. And most importantly, it has someone who's pressing play. So there is a huge human aspect to that. But what we don't want to end up with in terms of press freedom is the idea that the journalist has become redundant, that we no longer need that investigative mind. We no longer need that human interaction. Of course, that is one thing that we want to make sure continues, is that the voice of the voiceless comes from a human side and not from what an AI construct thinks it is.